Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat brought to you from Yerushalayim, Yir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Gimel, and we got right up to the Halakha Mishnah of HaChoresh Kolshehu. Richie's standing by on duty today for some heavy-duty work. So HaChoresh Kolshehu, well, okay, under the circumstances, go ahead. Thank you, Sir Richard. So now suddenly we're turning away from Binyan into what some of the Mefarshei HaMishnah point out is actually a mirror image of Binyan. Now, remember that we've had many times doing the same act in the house is Binyan, and when you do it out in the field, it's Harisha, right? So if you take a look at Bichlal, at the overall, conceptually speaking, Binyan is building things up, and Harisha is taking things down. Right. So if in Binyan, what you would want to do is you would be going above the ground, you would be filling in holes, you would be fixing the walls. In Harisha, you're trying to make holes, and you're trying to actually restore things to more of a state in which you could do things with them. So you're deconstructing, in a sense, if you're Binyan, and therefore if you're Choresh. So the very fact that we use the word deconstruction or deconstructionism is actually built on the concept of Binyan, putting things together. And what they do nowadays, of course, try to tear everything apart, but that would be essentially Harisha oriented. So because of that, we switch to Harisha as a part of our understanding of Binyan. Another approach to the Seder of the Inyanim, because it's a little strange, remember, to flip from Binyan back to the beginning, where we're talking about Harisha, is that what we're talking about over here are things that may allow you to be chayev, even b'kol shehu, which is rare, because most of the malachas have a particular shear. This is what is considered to be what you're doing. And because of that, these specific malachas, like the idea of makib patish, were over there, it's by definition koshu, it's the last step, however tiny that step is, brought us to understand that, look, the slightest advantageous step, which I can't give you a particular shear for, but that advantageous step, even if you're taking like your drill, you're making this tiny hole, that's going to be part of a malacha. So I need to know that that's even possible in some of the other malachas, because these malachas are achievement, not of, especially the way Rav understands it, not of a particular end in mind, but of a state that will allow things to be achieved. And that's a whole new concept, which generally speaking, won't provide you with a specific amount. I mean, what is the specific amount? So therefore, if you do any type of harisha, and again, when we say kolshu, obviously it doesn't mean anything at all. It's got to be usable, but the state itself can't be defined in the way we would do something like kneading, as we did for hotzah, kneading enough like a fig. So anybody who does that, or let's say you weed, how much do you have to weed to make it useful for a seed that's going to be growing in that area? I don't know, take out one weed, right? I mean, it's, whatever you take out is going to be useful. So you're creating the place for things to grow, and that you would be chayev even, if you do that, even zorea, right? Forget about preparing the ground, because you're actually making things grow better around it. Hamikarsem. If you prune. Now, there's a difference between mekarsem and mizareid. Both of them are pruning, but the mekarsem is to prune. What we usually think about pruning is you're cutting off like the dead branches, but there's also a cutting down on too many shoots so that you can get your plant to grow the way that you want it and to put in more of its energy into a particular direction than others. So you could cut off also, you prune off the overgrowth, which is very much alive. So in a way, it's the opposite of mekarsem, but the point is that it will cause the plant to flourish. So over there, kol shehu chayav. Any amount would be chayav, and that could be also because of zoreya. Hamalaket etzim. Now, if you're taking wood off of a tree, okay, here is an interesting idea in which the shear is going to be relevant in different ways to different purposes. And we have to take all of those different purposes into consideration. So look, in the takane, if the point is over here that you're interested in making the tree grow better, well, we just said that's kol shehein. But on the other hand, if what you're looking to do is to gather firewood from the tree, you would need enough firewood to be able to boil up a beitz kala, which we said would be a grogeret from a beitz tarnagol. And it depends, therefore, what you're doing. Hamalaket asabim. The same thing would be true. Let's say you're gathering up grass. So if what you're trying to do is get things to grow better, we just said that's a kol shehu. But if your purpose over here is you're gathering grass to feed an animal, well, we said the shear of feeding an animal would be the shear of a pi hagidi, because a kid is the animal that would be eating this grass. Now, Tosis has a problem with this. Tosis's problem is that we said before that as long as you have something that is usable for another purpose, so we spoke about the case over there, that you take out Tevin, which is usable as a pi para, and you take it out to feed your gamal. So then you would be chayev still, even on the smaller shear, despite the fact that the gamal is not going to be able to get anything out of that, doesn't matter. So then if that's the case, wouldn't the very fact that there is a smaller shear be sufficient to be mechayev you? Therefore, Tosfos says, the two cases are not just a function of what your intent is in what you're doing. It would have to be a question of what the usability is. So when we're talking about your intent is based on the quality of what it is that you're collecting. So if you're collecting grasses that are not usable for feeding, so then it would be for the fireplace. But if they were suitable for feeding and you're collecting them for a fireplace, why would that be different than mlo pi para legamal? Now, that is something that I think you can see may not be 100% absolutely mechayevas to say. All right, but in any event, our Mishnah has opened up the sugya over here, and it started off by saying that harisha could be any little bit, which makes you wonder, I mean, doesn't it have to be useful? What is a tiny little bit of harisha good for? What do you mean what it's good for? It's good for growing pumpkins, man. You can put in one pumpkin seed. Now tell me a pumpkin seed is not important. Do you realize what's going to grow out of that pumpkin seed? So because of that, you may get 400 pounds of pumpkin just from that little act of harisha. I think that's a very good purpose. And how do we know that that is considered to be a real act of harisha that doesn't seem to act on any piece of land that I would notice? Ah, because in the Mishkan, that would also be the way that they could do harisha. I mean, look, you don't really need very much dye stuff in order to be useful in the Mishkan. So if you wanted to make a kelach echad shel samanim, you wanted to put in one stalk of one of your dye stuffs, that would be the harisha that would be required. Then we talked about weeding or pruning, a different type of pruning, menakesh, bekarseim, mizared, toner rabbanan, hatolesh olshin. Somebody's picking olshin. Today we use olshin as being endives. Not really sure whether that's the real meaning of olshin. There's a lot of discussion about it. Ha mizared zradim, or you're pruning these reeds. Now, if you've got really nice shoots that are easy to eat, then they're usable for eating. So imla achila, then the shear would be the normal shear for achila, which is krugogeret. If it's usable for animal, then it's fodder, and then the shear of what would be eating that type of thing would be the melopi agid. If you're using it only for burning, again, according to Tosfos, this is quality-oriented, kidei levashel beit sakala, meaning a grogeret of a beit sakala. If the point was, however, in being tolish these olshin, or zradim, was liafot et hakarka, and that would make it easier for things to grow, then we said before, even the slightest amount, kol shein would be chayav. Ask the Gemara, but I don't understand. And this backs Tosis' contention. Isn't, by definition, everything that I'm doing, isn't it going to ultimately make the land easier? Because, I mean, it's the equivalent of weeding. So if I'm taking out Zradim, so then why haven't I made the land better for growing in? So why wouldn't I be chayev on the smaller shear? And in this case, that smaller shear goes to the kol shehu. So that should be sufficient to be mechayev me. Rabba v'Rav Yosef d'Amar Tarvayu. Well, you're right. It would have to be talking about land that it makes absolutely no difference about whether you took out the reeds. That these reeds were going in a swamp. So if you pull out the reeds, you're not doing anything to improve the land because you're not, this is swampland. Okay, that would mean that that's the only way that we could figure out the differences in the usability. Abaye says you don't have to go that far. Even if you would say, we're talking about a sada. But the point over here is that you cannot be mechayev him on the small shear because of the fact that he is not purposefully doing that. Now, that only works out according to Rabbi Shimon, who holds a dover sheinu mechaven, is not considered to be a malacha, right? Therefore, ask the Gemara, don't tell me it's kagon deloka mechaven because it's a dover sheinu mitkaven. Since over here, there is no way, is there, to avoid doing what it is that is an improvement to the land, even though your intent is to take out the reeds, so then Rabbi Shimon would not be operative over here. That principle of a malacha that is enemist kavin, if it's a psik resha, is irrelevant, no? And here comes that very important distinction we spoke about earlier, and that is the difference between a psik resha and a psik resha that is either lo nechale or a psik resha that is lo ichpatle, which you've already written in your munachim. And the Gemara says, we're talking about over here, tika'ovid ba'ara dechavre. You're doing this in somebody else's land. Therefore, the improvement of the land, now what it certainly seems to be saying is, therefore, the improvement of a land is irrelevant to you. And because of that, we don't have to be concerned about it. Because even though it may be a psik resha, it's not, by definition, the type of psik resha that turns your act into a mechavein. That's a big machlokus over many levels. First of all, would this have to be the land of somebody whose guts you hate? And therefore, all you want to do is steal the stuff, but you wish you could wreck the land while you were at it. So the psik resha is lo nechale? Or is it just you don't care because it's not your land, in which case it's the psik resha de lo ichpatle? I mean, that would depend on how we understand the idea of the breaking down the mechavim because of the psik resha. Furthermore, the question is whether this was an issue we raised earlier, that amazingly, according to the Aruch, you are allowed to do this lichatchila if it's a psik resha de lo nechale. Therefore there would be no shaila at all. It's that the Rabbanon wouldn't even have answered it according to Rabbi Shimon. Not merely that we're saying that a psik resha de lo nechale is considered to be something that Rabbi Shimon would not be mechayev on. It's that Rabbi Shimon would not even have asserted, which makes a heck of a lot of sense. I mean, if the point of Rabbi Shimon is that a malacha sheina tzricha legufa is potter, then you would be right in saying, okay, but potter means you're not allowed to. That's not what he says. He says a malacha sheina tzricha legufa is mutter. That was all of the cases. We're talking about dragging the chair, the bed across the floor and things like that that could make a channel. He says you don't have to worry about that. It's mutter. So either something is a psik resha, in which case it becomes no longer dover sheina miskavi, or it's not a psik resha. To say that once it's a psik resha, but it's not the right kind of psik resha that's going to make it a dover mekim mechavein, but there should still be an issur d'rabbanan. Where would that come from? Imagine a situation like this. You've got something locked in your car trunk on Shabbos. You want to take out your Gemara, your Daf Yomi, that you locked in your car trunk. Okay, so you want to go out, open up the trunk, and take out your Gemara. When you open up the trunk, a little light goes on. So are you allowed to open up the trunk? So, I mean, it's according to the Aruch. You don't want the light to go on because it's going to burn out your battery. So what's the point of having a light? The sun is shining on your car. So it's a psik resha de lo nechale. So it would be mutter even lechatchila. Open up the trunk. Who cares about the light? It's irrelevant. And therefore, you'd be able to take it out. This might even be nogea cases of lights and refrigerators and so on. So that would be a machlokes tosus tainus that it would be still lechatchila. It wouldn't be mutter. But as you could see, it's a very, very nogea machlokes. And now we are ready for the Halakha Mishnah. Go for it, Sir Richard. Now moving on for some reason to writing. Now we're going to have to figure out why are we suddenly going to writing. And it's interesting that we already raised the question of writing yesterday because we were talking about Kotev Shtei Otiot when you had a Yediyah L'Chatzi Shir, and that becomes like the dogma of Yesh Yediyah L'Chatzi Shir or not. And suddenly we get to the Mishnah, which indeed is talking about what these two Otiot would be. So if you write two letters, whether you use your right hand or you use your left hand, which, oh my God, how could that be? If you're using the wrong hand for writing, then it should be kila achar yad, right? Okay, it's going to be one of the issues we've got to talk about. So it doesn't matter whether you're using your right hand, whether you're using your left hand, or whether you're using the same character twice in a row, or you're using two different characters, makes absolutely no difference. Now, the question is, would that be the two letters of the same kind spell a word? I mean, that's how the Rambam learns. So the guy writes Gog, Dod, Rar, something like that. We're going to be discussing these letters in the Gemara. I mean, these are words. So writing two letters of the same kind are a word. But would just writing Olive, Olive, would that be, it's not a word, would that be Chayev? So that's not so poshut over here. The Rambam learns it would have to be the word. Rashi says even if you wrote olive olive or olive base, that would be the point. Olive base is a word, av. Olive olive is not a word. So it doesn't matter whether it was one character or two characters. And it doesn't matter even if it was written in two types of mediums. So let's say you used ink for one and you used berry juice for the other, you know? So it could be shtei samaniot, and this could be in any language, in any script, you would still be chayev. Om Reb Yossi, I mean, you don't need actual letters. Lo chivu shtei otiyot, ela mishum roshem. There is no din of kotev, as far as I'm concerned. The din, the malacha, is roshem, is making a mark. The basis of this entire thing is actually the Mishkan, as usual. And what was the marking on the Mishkan? The marking on the Mishkan was done in order to make certain that you would be matching up the Krashim. And this, of course, with the approach that we've been taking, would be a very good reason for us to have moved to Kotev. Because we're still talking about the Seder of the Binyan HaMishkan, which is the entire marker of Kotev, as far as we're concerned on Shabbat. Where else would you have any Ketivah to call it an Av Melacha? So since it's the Krashim, and the Krashim have been the basis of all of our discussions until now, it makes a great deal of sense for us to be moving on to Kotev. We don't need to talk about all of the kvetchy kind of pshatim that are brought up by the Mefarshim. So since the entire idea is that in order to mark a keresh, by the way, we learn out from here to do this for a sukkah as well, and many people do it with their sukkah, they will mark the walls of their sukkah, even though they're completely identical, the boards that they use for the sukkah, with a number or with a direction. This is the northeast board and so on and so forth. Because people think it's just because to make sure the holes are lined up and so on. But even if you're talking about a commercially made sukkah, people still do it. And the reason is because of the Karshei HaMishkan. Remember that the sukkah is also based, its shear is based on the Mishkan. And that's Yarato di Legano and all of the related issues of Tefillah and Shaychus Tzel, Tzelusa and so on. And therefore, the same way that the Karshei HaMishkan, they're not units. They're not just generic units. Every keresh has its place in the scheme of things. And therefore, they needed to mark, this is keresh number 3 from the end, and so on. So in order to do that, they would mark the ends of the krashim with some kind of symbol. It could just be 2 scratch marks or 3 scratch marks or whatever, in order to make it match up with the other keresh. Or they could use 1 scratch that would be across the 2 krashim that had to match up in terms of the placement. That has nothing to do with writing, says Rabbi Yossi. Is because Shikach Kutvim Al Kashei HaMishkan Leida Ezu Benzugo, which is the mate that's supposed to be next to it. So according to that, all of this discussion is ridiculous. It has nothing to do with writing letters and so on. I don't care what it is. Any symbols are sufficient in order to make that the Chiyuv. The Tanakama apparently holds that no. The boards of the Mishkan themselves were marked with letters to indicate which of the Krashim they are. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, you should know that even if a person set out to write something that was long, now this is, again, a continuation of the issue that we raised in the Chak Kapiza Bekaba a moment ago. The Chak Kapiza Bekaba, which was part of the introduction of the previous Mishnah's concept of any malacha that is mitkayemet the way that it is actually a very profoundly important din in malachas, because normally we take the malachas being defined by what it is that you want it to do. When it came to Hotzah, we got into the whole question whether 4 is included in 8, and would you be considering that a Hotzah, which led us into the issue of whether a Yediyah L'Chatzi Shir would be Nogea, even where you were walking 6 Amot, is it considered to be a malacha when it goes 4 amot, and so on and so forth, despite the fact that it's comprised of these various components of Hanocha and Akira, besides the actual Otzah, which was a very important discussion in and of itself, and is unique to Otzah. But when it comes, let us say, to Ksiva. So now, suppose a guy had set out to write the word Shimon, and instead he ends up writing the first two letters, which is Shem. So it says, Reb Yehuda, well, then you would be chayiv on that, because that would be mitkayem. I mean, it's not what you wanted to do, but it certainly is mitkayem in other places for people who are trying to write shame. And since there's no way to do one without doing the other, and since it's part of a process, so then that's the chak kapiza bekaba. You wrote a useful thing, which is mitkayem, as it would be in other circumstances, and that itself would be enough to be mechayev. So it's a shame katan, mishem gadol. That's, you have the word shame. So you make that, you have the word Shimon you were going to write. You ended up writing shame. Or you were going to write the word Shmuel. You ended up writing shame. Or Noach, when you were in the middle of writing Nachor. Or you wrote Dan, Midaniel. Or you wrote God from Jadiel. Now, there is an issue over here which we're going to have to get to in the Gemara, and that is that two of these examples are very blatantly problematic because they use a middle letter instead of an end letter. Shame Mishimon is not the correct way to write shame, and if people would think, what is that? And Dan Midaniel is a nun that is not a nun sofit, so why do you say it's mitkayemet b'makom acher? The Mishnah seems to be going out of its way to introduce a problem so that we should recognize the implications of that problem. And remarkably, this din of Kotev from the Mishkan becomes one of the important sugyas that is nogea halacha lemaisa in the dinim of Safrut because of this Shem Mishimon. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. So we're going to end up taking a look at the shape of all of the letters and the way that they are usable or not usable and possibly interchangeable or dangerously close to each other, as we'll see. So Bishlam says, look, I understand why if a guy uses his right hand, he would be chayev, because that's the normal way you write. But why would you be chayev for writing with your left hand? Who would write with their left hand? I mean, ask Moshe Forman. Does he know anybody that would write with his left hand? Outrageous. Omer Reb Yehuda, what do you mean? Lefties write with their left hand. So maybe it's referring to lefties. Come on, that's ridiculous. What are you referring to lefties? Then that's not your left hand, and that's your right hand, basically. I mean, obviously, the difference between right and left is not right and left. The difference would be in terms of derech tivah or not derech tivah. I mean, so you're not telling me anything when you say, doesn't matter if you use your right hand or your left hand. Obviously, it doesn't matter if that's your hand. But when you say it doesn't matter, what you're trying to tell me is, even if it's not the derech tivah, so how could that be? That makes no sense. Tavi small didei came into kulei alma. So a small l'chayev, then he would only be chayev on his left hand and not on his right hand. But the Mishnah is saying you're chayev on both hands. Ha ha ha. Says Abai, of course. Being sholeit with shtei yadav, if you're ambidextrous, then the Mishnah is coming to tell you. You might think that ambidextrous means that you basically are not sholeit, or you might think that ambidextrous means that there's always one that is slightly more usable than the other, and you'd only be chayev on that one. Kamashmalan, if lamaisi you're ambidextrous, you would be chayev on either. Rav Yaakov bereid bat Yaakov amar. We don't mention his father's name because he was not Roy to be mentioned, as we see elsewhere. So who is this going like? It's going like Reb Yossi. If you hold like Reb Yossi and Reb Yossi holds, writing is not the issue. Marking is the issue. Well, come on. I mean, you can mark something with any hand, right? I mean, all you're making is two lines or squiggles. So you do not need a right hand in order to write squiggles. And that's what the Mishnah is good for pointing out. Wait a minute. The Reb Yossi is only introduced later on in the Mishnah. The Seifa is Reb Yossi. So if the Seifa is Reb Yossi, how could you tell me that the Stam statement at the beginning of the Mishnah, Ben Bimino, Ben Bismolo, is Reb Yossi? Well, this is one of the cases where we neglected to mention the author of the Mishnah in the beginning, and therefore we bring him up at the end, but really Kula Reb Yossi. And this is the way that we're letting you know. Om Reb Yehuda. Okay, let's take a look at the last piece of the Mishnah where Reb Yehuda holds Shem Mishimon. So what does that mean? That it's dafka? I mean, every single one of the examples that he brings are examples of two different letters, correct? I mean, Reb Yehuda did not say, if you write sheish misheshach, you would be chayev. I mean, that would be a bigger chiddush, right? Because, I mean, then you've got two letters that are the same. Why does he go out of his way to talk about two letters that are not the same? In every single example, are you trying to tell me that shtei otiot v'hem shnei shemot, tu nemechayev, it would have to be two letters of two different types of character. But if it would be shtei otiot, which are the same letters, you would not be mechayev, but that's not true. Vatanya, take a look at this braita. The asa achat, now we're going to go into the drasha that we've had before many times. We're going to deal with it several times on this daf. So, the asa achat mikol, what is asa achat? Asa achat is not what it says. It says asa me achat, right? So you might think that a person wouldn't be chayev. Let's say you're about to write the word Shmuel. You would not be chayev unless you wrote the entire word, achichtov kol hashem, or if you were planning on making a scarf. You would only be chayev when you finish the scarf. Or if you're planning on making a sifter, you're chayev when you finish weaving, so to speak, from the little pieces of reed, the entire sifter. Talmud lomar, no, it doesn't say masachat, it says me'achat. Me'achat would mean that even if it's part of something, so then if that's the case, you might think any little part. Afilu katav ela ot achat, velo asa ela bayit echad binafa. So suppose you made only one bayit. One bayit would be the equivalent, remember we discussed this before, of a heddle. Now you don't really obviously make heddles. You only make heddles when it comes to actual, you know, threads. I mean, you don't take reeds and make heddles to pull them up and down, right? But you do make the equivalent of a heddle, as we saw before, because when you're making the basket weave, you set up your equivalent of chassis threads. You've got your warp. And in order to keep the warp in place, you put through something that goes above one, under the other, above the next, and under the other, in order to make a full bayit that will hold together instead of just springing apart for you. So that would be the equivalent. So you might think that even if you would do that, that would be one, a single one would be sufficient. Or if you write one letter, that would be sufficient. And you wouldn't need to do something that would be mitkayemet, as we said before, that's a key idea here. Talmud Lomar, therefore, the Torah says also achat. So is it achat or is it me achat? Has to be the whole thing or even the tiniest bit. Therefore, what we have to say is that you're chayev, not on the whole thing, but at least it needs to be something that's mitkayemet as it is. Shem katon, mishem gadol. So, for instance, if you have Shem Mishimon Mishmuel, or Noach from Nachor, or Dan mi Daniel, or Gad mi Gadiel, and now all of a sudden we meet a Rabbi Yehuda's opinion that says Beferish not like the Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, which seems to be over here the equivalent of the Tanakhama here, and in fact Rabbi Yehuda says, not true. It could be lo katav el shtei otiot v'im shem echad chayv. You don't need to have two different names, the meaning of characters, like Shin Mem or Gimel Dalet. You could have Shin, Tuf, Resh, Gimel, Chet. Every one of those two combinations are words, right? So Sheish is obviously a word. Tate is a word, to give. Rar means to ooze out. Gog is a roof. A chach is a decor. Is a bracelet of some kind. So, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda contradicts himself. I mean, here he's saying you do not need gimel dalet. Then we've got another shita, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi says, no, there's no such thing as writing anyway. As I explained in the Mishnah, explains here in the Braita, Hallo eno chayav ala mishum rosh shem, shekein rosh mimal kasheya mishkan leida is ben zugo. Therefore, even if you just did a scratch across two boards, it was one srita, now you can match them up, or you put two scratches on one board in order to be able to give the information that this is board number two, you would be chayav without a single letter. So stop all of this discussion about which letters. No letters are important. And then we have Rabbi Shimon, who now analyzes the same pasuk, v'yasa me'achat mikol, and he says, no, now look, it says on the one hand, achat, that means you need to do the whole thing. So, yochel achi yichtov et kol ha'shem, or achi yarog et kol ha'beged, or achi yasat kol ha'nafa, exactly what we said before, Talmud lomar, me'achat. On the other hand, if it says me'achat, you might think that you could write one letter, or you could just make one thread be surrounded by the weft thread, or lo asa elabayit achad binafa, Talmud lomar achat. No, it has to be something that will stand. Haketzad. Oh, now he comes out with a new conclusion. Not shem mishimon, but rather anything she'achi asemelacha shekayot sebo is mitkayemet. So in other words, it would have to be good enough. Now, I mean, we said this before, no? I mean, it's not clear what it is that he's coming to add. We're going to ask, what exactly is the Chiddush of Rabbi Shimon? And then once we're talking about the Pasuk of Yasa Achat and then the understanding of the Chatas, we bring up the classic Limud that we've spoken about many times. Rabbi Yossi Omer, V'yasa Me'achat Mehena, which it could have said V'yasa Achat, or it could have said V'yasa Hena, and it says Me'achat Mehena. So therefore, we got this complex drush that we did earlier in trying to figure out how we know that sometimes you chayav one chatas for doing all the bunch of malachas, if it was a Shigat Shabbat. Sometimes you chayav for even on the same Shabbat, you'd be chayav in all 39 malachas if you knew it was Shabbos, but you forgot each one of the malachas and so on, was based on this drush of Me'achat Mehena. So first of all, we learn out like this. Pamim shechayev achat akulan. Sometimes you'll be chayev one korban for doing all of these lamates malachas. And sometimes you would be chayev each malacha separately, al kol achat ve'achat, even on the same Shabbat. Okay, so now let me get back to my question. We'll get back to understanding all of these shitas, but Rabbi Yehuda is contradicting himself, right? I mean, he wrote here, even if it's the same thing, chach, ra, shesh, and there, in the Mishnah, the only case that he brings is God Migadi El or Shemi Shimon and so on. So how do you explain that? Katani mi hazafilu lo katav al shteyot yod v'shemi echad, that you would still be chayev. Says the Gemara, look, the truth is that what it says in the Mishnah, that is what Rabbi Yehuda holds. God Migadi El, Shemi Shimon. What he says in the Braita, however, is what he learned from his Rebbe. And that is Rabbi Gamliel. How do I know that? Because there's another brayta where he says that beferish. D'tanya, Rabbi Yehuda omer mishum Rabbi Gamliel, afilu lo katav ala shtei otiyot vehem shem echad, chayav, kagon sheish, teit, rar, gag, chach, and therefore, there is no problem in Rabbi Yehuda. So we've got now two shitas that we said were Rabbi Yehuda. One is that it has to be two letters that are different. One that it can be even two letters that are the same. Now, getting on to Rabbi Shimon, what Rabbi Shimon said over here with his whole analysis of what it means when it says that you don't have to do achas, it could be me achas, that's exactly what we had said before, is that not the time, it says Tanakama, but it means the way in, since Rabbi Yehuda Shita is confusing, because in one place it's Rabbi Gamliel Shita, and the other place it's Rabbi Yehuda Shita, we call him the Tanakama. So what initially Rabbi Yehuda had said over here, in the Braita, which is really Rabbi Yehuda Mishum Rabbi Gamliel, is that you'd be chayev on writing any two letters, even if those two letters are the same letters, as long as they are meaningful things, and that's what Rabbi Shimon said. Rabbi Shimon says, as long as it's mitkayem, what's the difference? And if you're going to try to tell me, wait a minute, there may be a very big difference. The difference might be writing two letters that don't seem to mean anything. Let's say you would write olive, olive. right? You're going to write the word A-A-Zer-Cha. And you just write the olive, olive. But what the heck does olive, olive mean? It doesn't mean anything. So then that would be the difference, right? So the Tanakhama holds that you're not chayiv on A-A-Zer-Cha because look at all the examples. Sheish, rar, chach, every one of those things was a word that had meaning, whereas olive, olive doesn't have any meaning. And Rabbi Shimon is not bringing any specific example. He says, any melacha that would be mitkayemet b'mokam acher, well, there's lots of places where people write olive, olives. I mean, they write olive, olives in glature, which are kinds of kamiyas. You always find these strange, I mean, you've all seen these things, these strange combination of letters that they put there don't seem to mean a darn thing. But since people write it, so it's mitkayemet b'makom acher, and Rabbi Shimon holds, that itself is sufficient to be mechayev of you, and that would be the difference. You're wrong. That's not the difference, because that would be saying that Rabbi Shimon is going l'chomra. And we know that Rabbi Shimon is going lakula. Rabbi Shimon can't be saying, no, you don't need to write something meaningful. Any two letters, that would be a big chumrah. And lamema the Rabbi Shimon lachumrah, and even alav alav you'd be chayiv, but we know in the Braita that it's Rabbi Shimon who takes, we've seen this before, Rabbi Shimon always takes the kula side, because it says in the Braita, hakudeach koshu chayav, you drill a tiny hole, we said, it would be chayav, and over here the kosher means you didn't even get through all the way when you wanted to get to the other side. If you were in the process of smoothing out, let's say, a piece of cloth, and you do only a tiny bit, hamigarer kosher, you'd be chayav. You're tanned a little bit of the skin that you were going to tan. You're chayav. Hatzar beklit tzurah kosher, you put a little bit of a design on a kli. You're chayav. Rabbi Shimon says, no, you're not chayav on any little bit. You would have to drill the hole that you set out to drill. If you were going to go through the piece of wood, you got to go through the piece of wood. If you were going to make the entire cloth smooth, or you were going to make a piece of wood smooth, you got to do the whole thing. If you're going to tan a hide, you can't tan a piece of it to be chayav, ad she'abedet kulo. And if you're going to design something, you got to do the whole design. Anyway, but you see that Rabbi Shimon Dafke is the one who holds that you would not be chayav for writing olive, olive, azercha. So how could you have suddenly the machlokas defined in the other direction? So therefore, what we're going to have to say is that Rabbi Shimon is coming to tell us that you really need to write the whole thing. What the heck is... what is wrong with you? That's exactly what he doesn't say, darn it. How could you say that? Mimatzit Amradachi, it said in the bridegroom, please read what Rabbi Shimon says. V'yasa achat. You might think that this means you have to write this whole thing. No. Kamashwa me'achat. You don't have to write the whole thing. What's going on with you? No. There's different whole things. There's whole things in terms of sentences, and there's whole things in terms of words. So I'm the only way, I mean, look, did or did not Rabbi Shimon openly say, if you don't go through the piece of wood with the drill, you're not chayev? If you didn't finish the entire design you were going to put on, you're not chayev. So why, if you're going to put on a word, and you put on half of the word, would you be chayev, sir? So you have no choice. You're going to have to redefine Rabbi Yossi, okay? So therefore, the chiddush of the achat and me'achat, according to Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Shimon, has got to be saying something else. That where you've got a project, okay, your project is you're writing Megillas Esther. So what are you going to tell me? You're not chayev until you write the whole Megillas Esther? Obviously, that's not what he holds. So what we're talking about are projects that are constituted of units. What type of units do we mean? So on the one hand, we're saying if you're writing a word, the units of the word are not considered to be complete units in and of themselves because they're letters. This is not what I'm writing. I'm writing a meaningful unit of information, not something that somebody else would view as meaningful. But if I'm writing an entire sentence and I write a word, are you going to tell me that a word is not a full-scale unit of a meaningful sentence? It's meaningful. And therefore, what it needs to say is like this, that Teretz ve'emahoch, you might think that you have to write the entire sentence that you set out to write. Yochalach yichtov et ha-pasuk kulo. Therefore, it says, me'achat, to tell me, no. Even one part of that pasuk, meaning an intelligible word in its entirety that I was going to write, that I would be chayev on. Rabbi Yossi said in that braita, that ve'asa achat ve'asa hina, that since we basically have two psukim, right? We have the nefesh, im nefesh tachata ve'asa achat mikol mitzvot Hashem, And then when we have the description of the chatat, the chachayv says, v'asa me'achat me'ena. Now, it makes no sense to say me'achas me'ena. You could have said either v'asa hena or asa achat. So first we darshaned, v'asa achat v'asa hena, the drasha that we've done many times before. Pa'amim shechayav achat hakulam, pa'amim shechayav kol achat v'achat. It depends whether you had a shigigat Shabbat or whether you had a shigigat melachot. Fine. Om Reb Yezbe Reb Chanina, let me explain how he's learning the pasuk. It could have said achat, like it did in the beginning of the sugya. But it says instead me'achat. Could have said hena, but instead it says me'hena. So because of that, we're darshaning achat shehi hena, ve'hena shehi achat. Meaning that if you do many, many melachas, it's still possible it's only one iser. And it's possible you do one iser, and you are still going to be chayiv for many, many different ways of doing it, which is one Shabbos, but you forgot the melachas. Then he's dashing like this. Achat would mean you want to write the word Shimon. Me'achat means you can even write just part of the word, Shem Shimon. Then, furthermore, what do we learn out the mem of Hena? Hena would mean the essential avot, what I'm looking at here in the Mishkan. Me'hena does not mean part of them, it means derivatives from, because remember, may could mean either thing, from in the sense of derivative, or from in the sense of part of. And therefore, the mehena refers to the toladot. So all of this is merumas in the posik of the chiyav of the chataot. Achat shihihena, what does Nahalim explain to you? Achat shihihena means you knew that it was Shabbos and you're going to be chayav hena. Why? Because you forgot many different melachot. You can have a hena, shihi achat, you can do many, many isurim by doing all of the 39 melachas, and you'd only be chayav once as Shabbos. Where's that? Shigagat Shabbat vizidon melachot. Okay, getting back to the Mishnah now. Omer Rav Yehuda, matzinu shem katan mishem gadol. Oh, wait a minute here. Is that true? If you wrote shem mishimon, is that word really mitkayem b'makom acher? If somebody looks at that word that you wrote, shin mem out of shimon, would they ever mistake it for a word? Absolutely not. It's got a mem that is not a final mem. So you take one look at that and you say, well, what else were you going to write? So how are you saying that this is mitkayem b'makom acher? It's not true. The mem of the word shem ought to be satum. It ought to be closed. As a mem sofit, the mem of the same shem shimaon is patuach. Omer of Chista, from here you learn an amazing thing. That zot omeret satum v'asa'ol patuach kasher. That actually there is no absolute requirement to write the shemot, the letters, that is, the way that we're used to writing them. The fact that there are two versions of a mem is not ma'akiv. Ask the Gemara, but that's not true. Take a look at this braita. Uchtav tam. Now, when the Torah says uchtav tam, that means kitiva tama. It has to be completely perfect. And you cannot make a mistake when you're writing a mezuzah and you're writing a tefillin, or we learn out from there also when you're writing a sefer Torah. And what would that mean to make the writing perfect? Shelo yichtov alefin ayanim or ayanim alefin. Don't write an aleph when you're supposed to be writing an ayin, or don't write an ayin when you're supposed to be writing an aleph. Now Rashi says, because there doesn't seem to be any pshat that would answer it, how the heck could you mix up an ayin and an aleph? The only way to mix up an ayin and an aleph would be in terms of pronunciation, since some people are not careful. But then I need to know kuchtav tam. That's called ktivat tama. It's a completely different letter. I mean, the fact that you happen not to know how to pronounce things, we need a pasuk to tell me that that would be okay? Makes no sense. So it must mean, Taina, the other Rishonim, most other Rishonim, that this is a one-direction limud, and you should not write your aleph as an ayin simply means don't leave off the leg of the aleph to the left, because then the aleph becomes a backwards ayin. So if you take a look at an ayin, you flip the ayin, it's an aleph without its left leg. Okay, so then how could you possibly make an ayin as an aleph? You can't, but in order to keep it even, we said, don't make this, don't make A, B, and don't make B, A. That obviously would be a good reason for Rashi not to like that pshat too much. And then when you get to a bait, don't make your bait look like a chaf or your chaf look like a bait. You have to be very careful to have that little piece on the bottom of the bait sticking out. And you have, what are you yawning for? And you have to have the chaf rounded on the bottom so that it doesn't look like a bait. And when you make a gimel, may be careful not making that gimel look like a tzaddik and not making that tzaddik look like a gimel, because that is very easy to do. It is. Yes, actually, you'd think that that's a little ridiculous. But if you think about it, a simple gimel, if you make the gimel, make in your mind a line gimel, just a line going up and a line going out on the left. Flip it over, and what do you get? A tzadi sofit, right? So don't make your gimels like that. Your gimels have to actually be bent and be properly shaped so that they would never work backwards as a tzaddik sofit. Now, the other way of understanding is we're not talking about a tzaddik sofit. We're talking about a regular tzaddik. Leave off the right side, the arm of the tzaddi, and you're left with a nun, assuming that you made the bottom of the tzaddi a little bit curved and it went up and then down again. It would look exactly like a gimel. So don't make your gimels and tzaddiks like that. Don't make a dalet like a resh, meaning that you don't have the little piece that sticks out to the right, and don't make your resh like a dalet by sticking some kind of tag on the right top of the dalet. Don't make your hey a chet, and don't make your chet a hey. Do not attach the leg of the hey to the top of the hey, because then it would look like a ches. And also, it's very important that your ches, which it gets thinner as it goes up to the top of the Zion on the left, should not look like a hay because you left off a little piece of the top of that Zion. So be very careful not to do that either. Make sure that your vav doesn't look like a yud by making it too short, and make sure your yud doesn't look like a vav by making it too long. Make sure that your Zion does not look like a nun, and that your nun does not look like a Zion. The meaning, this would mean a straight nun that comes at the end of the word. But wait a minute, from here we learn out a very important halacha, namely that when you do write a nun sofit, the nun sofit, the leg of the nun sofit comes to the middle of its head. And that's the reason that it would be a Zion, because if you would make the nun sofit, it looked like a long elongated vav, and it would come up to the side of its head, then the Gemara would never have said, don't make your Zion look like a nun. It would say, don't make your vav look like a nun, and your nun look like a vav. And the Tosis derives from here the halacha of the psul of the nun sofit based on this Gemara. Don't make your tet like a pei, and don't make your pei like a tet. Now, what that would mean is, again, Tosis learns out from here, my gosh, you see from here that the top of the tet has to be bent in the way that a pei is bent in, so that if you leave off the left side of the pei and you didn't draw the top of it, then you would have basically a pei that is now a tet because it doesn't have its left side. So that means that when you draw your tet just with the top going horizontally, it's not a kosher tet. Again, based on this Gemara. Don't make your mem sofit look like a samach, and don't make your samach look like a mem. And don't make a satum patuach, and don't make a patuach satum. Uh-oh. Because we just said before that based on our Mishnah of Shem Mishimon, that it's okay to flip a satum for a patuach or a patuach for a satum. Gentlemen, what the heck is all of this doing here, of all places, in Shabbos? The dinim of the ktiva? Ah. The answer, my friends, is blowing in the wind. Where do we learn out ktiva from? Remember, the karshe ha-mishkan. What did you need to know in order to make a mishkan? Yodea haya b'tzalel otiyot shenivru b'hem shomayim v'aretz. So we're finally getting to a long description of all of the remazim, of some of the remazim of Shomayim, of the Otiyot Shenivru Bo Shomayim V'aretz. We're going to see the craziest kinds of remazim in all types of alternative olive bases that the Gemara is going to be going through, because all of these things, they all come from the Sefer Yetzirah. And in the Sefer Yetzirah, of course, is all the Chochmah of Bezalel, who was Yodea Letzarif, the Osias Yerbeniv Rubem Shemayim Varet. So brilliantly, right after we deal with the Inyonim of the Krushim and the Halacha of the Ktiva, which is learned from the Krushim, we now get to the actual Tzuras HaOsios and the Chiburim of the Osios, as we're going to see, the Tzirufa Osios, that starts with what appears to be just a general idea, you know, Shem Mishimon and so on. And now it turns out to be an examine. That's amazing. The multi-level complexity, the way the Gemara is constructed. And that leads us, as it will, to an analysis of the various olive bases that are all listed in Sefer Yetzirah as an expression of Chochmas Bezalel. So we begin easily. Anyway, so on the surface level of the Gemara, so what we're asking is how can the mem of Shem of Shmuel be a kosher mem if it's a mem which is ptucha? Here it says that it's not kosher because you have to be careful not to make a satum patuach and a patuach satum. Now, in addition, a parasha, which is a parasha stuma, cannot be made ptucha, and a ptucha cannot be made a stuma. If you write a normal piece like a shira has its special way of being constructed, of a riach, agabi levena, and levena agabi ariach, if you change the graphic structure of the Torah, either in terms of the amount of letters that you have between one paragraph or another, or in the way in which it looks graphically, if it's supposed to be a poetic section of shira, or you wrote a shira as if it were normal prose, Osha katav shalo bidyo, let's say you wrote even one word, one letter in a Sefer Torah with not kosher ink, which would be made either with something that's not mitkayem, or it's a different color, we'll see later on, and the next sugya. So in any of these cases, let's say you wanted to do something really fancy, you know, so you took gold shavings and you turned them into a kind of paste and you wrote the Shemot Hashem with gold, right? Thinking that, wow, oh, this is really a super duper kosher Sefer Torah because every Shem Hashem is written in pure gold, right? Now, all of these things are a disaster. You can't erase it because, I mean, the writing is there. You're not allowed to erase the Shem Hashem. And all of these cases would be Yiganezu. So you would have to hide the Sefer Torah so that people wouldn't come to read it. Anyway, how do you explain Shem Mishimon? Answers the Gemara Rav Chista, who says that you are allowed to change the mem p'tucha to the mem stuma, is going according to this braita, the Tanya, Rav Yehuda ben Beteira Omer. When it comes to the dinim of the nisachim on Chag HaSukkot, so you remember that it goes through all of the 7 days of Sukkot, and it describes exactly what you have to do, and it reads exactly the same on every single day, except that we go down with one of the parim every single day, right? But if you look closely, you discover that there are three strange changes. And that is that in the closing word, we say on the second day, instead of viniska, that appears every single day, we say viniskehem. So we add somehow a mem to viniska. And on the sixth day, instead of saying viniska, we add a yud, which reads unisacheha. And then on the seventh day, we add kemishpatam, instead of kamishpat on all the other days. And therefore, we've got a mem, which gives us an additional mem on day two, an additional yud on day six, an additional mem, again, on day seven. What does mem yud mem spell? Mayim. Mikan remez l'nisuch ha-mayim min ha-Torah. And so that means you have a remez over here for pouring out the water on the mizbeach. Now, the problem is, by the way, the remez to that in the beautiful drosha of the Zohar is imitain ish kol hon beito bi-ahava boz yavuzulo. If somebody would like to buy love with every last penny that he's got. So you could have Donald Trump trying to buy into Klal Yisrael just to get a chance to bring the Mayim on the Mizbeach. Boz Yavuzulo, we'd laugh him out of the house. Boz stands for 2, 6, 7, which is Mayim in the, okay, that's the That's the expression of the love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our participation in Ma'aseh Bereishis with the Mayim that allows the Adam to be the Avdai v'Lashomrei. In any event, how could we learn out from Mem Yud Mem of the V'Niskehem? Since the V'Niskehem, the Mem is closed, how can you have a closed Mem at the beginning of the word that spells Mayim if that's not a kosher Mayim, right? And so it doesn't spell Mayim, doesn't spell a darn thing, because you've got to ignore that first Mem, right? So it must be that nonetheless, that it's kosher. Now, if something that was supposed to be a patuach, the mem was supposed to be an open mem, and here we're koshering it because it's a closed mem, so then vice versa, what I said before about Shem Mishimon, something that was supposed to be a closed mem, which was Shem, and I made it open, it should also be kosher. So Satum V'Asa'o Patuach should also be kosher. Asks the Gemara, is that true? There's a big difference between the two, because perhaps the Mem Yud Mem is supposed to be an open Mem, and instead you made it a closed Mem. The reason that that's kosher is because when you make something closed, you're actually going up in its Kedusha. Iluye koma alele. And that would be the reason that it was kosher. But if it was supposed to be closed, like shame, and you left it open, you would be reducing its kedusha. What? Where do we get the idea that there's a higher kedusha of a closed? But I'll show you. The Omer of Chista. Mem v'samach shebeluchot b'nei sayu omdim. The letters mem and samach that were written in the Luchot HaBrit must have been miraculous. Why miraculous? Because as we're going to see later on, the Luchot were not engraved. They were actually going from one side to the other. Now, all the other letters, it's all very nice to talk about them going from one side to the other. But what do you do with a letter that has a middle, and that middle would have to be held up by a force field? And so how do you get a mem? All you get is a hole. Where's the middle of the mem, right? Or where's the middle of the samach? Those letters would have to have been held in place by a nes. So that shows that the luchos, the mem and the luchos, were completely closed. But in the case where you're supposed to have a mem that is satum, such a shame, and you wrote it as the shame from Shimon, which is a so patuach, then you are actually lowering it and you're making it less kodesh. Why? Because the Omer of Yirmiyahu Item Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, note that the letters that have the variation between the open and the closed are Mem, Nun, Tzadi, Pei, and Chof, correct? That's the difference between the open-ended, the open letters and the straight letters. So we have the bent letters and so on. And that would mean, note that they're out of order, right? It should be Pei Tzadi. Well, how do you get Tzadi Pei? It's a weird thing to write. So we have a remez here, as Tosis points out, from the word itself, put those letters together, and what do you get? Mansapach are min tzofim. That the letters mansapach were created by the tzofim, which would mean by the Nevi'im. So that would mean that the mem patuach is a takana that came later on. And therefore, you're lowering that tremendous original mem chashivas from the luchot, and you're making it now only because it's a Nevi'im thing. So it should, that would might be its possible shemi shima. Oh, come on, man. You can't really believe any of this, can you? Vitizbra. How could the Nevi'im make new letters? Ve'oktiv eila ha-mitzvot she'ein avi rishai l'chadesh davar mi'ata. There's nothing new that you can do. And in the dinim of the Torah, and the dinim of the ksiva of the Sefer Torah is a mitzvah, so you cannot change the halachas of the original mitzvah. So how could they have actually given you new letters? Of course it doesn't mean that. Of course, mehavi havi, originally there were always both. You had an option of using a mem patuach and a mem satum. However, there was no idea of where we were supposed to be koveya, the patuach, and where we should be koveya, the satum. So, mida lo havi yadin hai be'emtza teva hai besof teva. Come along the Nevi'im, and they said, look, let's make it a permanent situation. You always use the closed version of the mem at the end. But the letter is kosher. What do you mean? What do you mean they decided? Akati Ela Mitzvah, you can't decide that. You're just making it a lesser chiddush, but you're still, it's a chiddush. And Ein Avir Shaila Chadesh Davar. True. The truth is that it became less known. People had forgotten them. Shechachum. V'chazru v'yisadum. Because remember, there was an entire period during which Ktav Ashurit was not being used for its normal purposes because of its Darg of Kedusha. So they used the Ktav Ivri. In the Ktav Ivri, none of this appears. As a matter of fact, it's not, it's the Ayin, which is the one that would have to be Eimed B'nais, because the Ayin looked like the Samach. And therefore, it went out of the common knowledge of those that were familiar with the esoteric elements of the Osios, which were Koveya, where they belong, came along the Nevi'im and simply reminded everyone, because they were the ones who were the Baalei Kabbalah from Moshe Rabbeinu, and they taught everyone how it should be. Okay, let's get back to Rav Chisda. Rav Chisda says the Mem and the Samach and the Luchot were standing there in a miraculously in midair of the Luchos. Because that's basically, as Rav Chisda pointed out elsewhere, that the Ktav Shebeluchot, Nikra mi bifnim and Nikra mi bachutz, anything written on the Luchos could be written on, could be read on both sides, because they were carved from one end through the other end. So if you turn them around, now this is one of the big Kabbalistic elements in the Gemara, because the Gemara says, for instance, and then it brings words that don't appear in the Luchos at all. Much ink has been spilled on describing why Nevuv Luchot are actually bonbons. And so Nevuv is Buban, and the Bahar is a Rahav, and Soru is a virus. So all of this are Ramazim and did not appear in the Luchos, as both Rashi and Tosfos. What the heck are we bringing examples that are not very good examples?